All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you, as always, by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain. Whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps, the BZ4X will get you through it all. Remote edition of Canucks Conversation. And folks, despite it being a game day, it's going to be a jam-packed episode here as we chat with Frank Saravalli. In a matter of moments, changing it up a little bit here, Frank's going to join us pretty early. And Harm, I know the burning question that we have for Frank is, what's Filip Hronek really going to cost? We've heard a lot of different reporting lately. We've heard that there was a rejected offer, an offer that was rejected rather quickly by Filip Hronek's camp. And Harm, this is a conversation you and I have had a ton. So let's continue that conversation right off the top of today's show. Frank's going to join us, like I said, in a matter of moments. So I want to chat about it and kind of set it up a little bit more, because Tyson Cole wrote about this yesterday at Canucks Army. He's doing a series where he looks at what it's going to cost to sign every free agent that the Canucks have, and if the Canucks should even be interested in that player at those numbers. We did Nikita Zadorov to kind of kick off the series there. And like we've said on this show a few times, Harm, if Zadorov's coming in at like a 5x5, the Canucks should stay away from that. But for Filip Hronek, what is it for Filip Hronek that you say, okay, that's just too much?
It's difficult to put a specific price on it, because you can't just weigh, okay, this is the walkaway point, because you have to weigh it against, okay, what would his trade value be? And unless you know what his trade value is, like I'll give you a good example, plus your other available sort of plan B check options, because that's going to determine how much leverage you have to walk away as an organization. And if you feel confident that, okay, Hronek has pretty good trade value, and there are other defensemen on the market, such as, for example, like a couple of years ago, John Marino type defenseman becomes available. And let's say you really like that type of player and think he could replicate what Hronek did for Hughes, then you're going to be far more inclined to draw a hard line in the sand and say, $8 million, no way, get out of here. We're going to move you and we're going to find someone else. Whereas if you test the waters on Hronek on the trade market and you're like, there's not that much trade value for him because other teams are also looking at his next contract and worried about the cost of that, and there aren't any other defensemen, right shot, who can play in a top pair next to Quinn Hughes, then you may even look at a number like, you know, 7.75 or $8 million, understand that it's an overpayment, and go, we don't want to pay this number, but just to keep this core together, especially because we're trying to win the Stanley Cup, you may not have any other choice, right? So it's hard for me right now to sit and say, this is the exact parameters of the contract where I'd walk away, because I don't know what my alternative options are. And I think that's going to be a fascinating part of the equation for the Canucks as well, if this drags into the summer.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. And it's interesting that you brought up the aspect of, well, we want to keep this core together and we're trying to win the Stanley Cup. I wonder how much playoff success this summer, this playoff run, this spring, I should say, hopefully summer, but how long and how far this team goes this year, how much that's going to play into it, right? And, you know, how big of a part Filip Hronek is in all of that. And I wonder if that would kind of play a factor in how it might play a factor. Obviously it will play a factor. I just wonder how much and you know what impacts what. It's going to be very interesting. And look, I know he's an RFA. This is one I feel like the Canucks don't have to rush. Like I feel like the Canucks do not have to rush to get this one done.
Yeah, he of course does have a lot of leverage because of arbitration rights. But I mean, I am increasingly through the second half of the season becoming a little bit concerned that I mean, Quinn Hughes Merchant might be too strong of a term to tag what Hronek's been doing, but he has benefited enormously from playing with Quinn Hughes, racking up a ton of points, even though he hasn't been a fixture on power play one. His counting stats are brilliant, but I worry that he's not as good as his point totals and ice time and his plus minus indicates.
Well, we saw him get walked last game, right? Like that's the thing that everybody's going to be pointing out. And look, I've said it before, we say it again. He has not held a pairing on his own at any point. He's had a few chances and it's been almost a disaster each time. But let's not waste any more time. Frank Saravalli is here and he's going to be joining us. And I'm very excited about this. We can bring him in. We've got a low sponsor count today. Everybody complains about the ad reads, except Logan Van Dyke there is going to have a lot that are popping up on YouTube. But anyways, Frank, thank you so much for joining us. Filip Hronek, what's his next contract going to come in at? Is it going to be with the Canucks?
I told you guys all along, and I've been super consistent in saying this, Filip Hronek's next deal will start with an 8. I don't know if it's going to be in Vancouver, but it'll start with an 8.
Yes. So that's kind of what we're all talking about today, Frank. And it's been a topic in this market for a while now. And yes,
let me guess. Yep. It's been a topic in your market because Pettersson signed and now you guys don't have anything else to talk about.
Okay, yeah, sure, you can pull the whole media thing, but we saw the reports right away that as soon as Pettersson was done, Patrick Alvin and his management group went out and they said they want to get Hronek done. We know that.
Who reported that their spies saw Hronek's agent, Alan Walsh, and Patrick Alvin talking in LA during practice?
I can't remember. Was it you?
Yeah, it was me.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I mean, so it's an obvious next course of business. You get Pettersson done. Who's the next biggest guy on the list? Filip Hronek.
It is. Yes. And that's why we're talking about it.
If you want to talk about it, I'll give you the update as far as I know it. I don't think there's anything happening right now. I don't think there's been any negotiating. I have read and seen some of the breathless reporting that's taken place over the last 10 days to 2 weeks. I think some of it is wildly inaccurate. I don't think there's been anything offered. I don't think there's been anything rejected. I think they haven't done anything past some preliminary conversations, which have been very cordial. And I think any speculation about Filip Hronek getting in line behind Quinn Hughes on the salary cap is also pure nonsense. Pure nonsense.
Expand on that second part.
I mean, that's like comparing a Prius and a Corvette. These two things don't make any, like they're not, we're not comparing two similar things in the sense that Quinn Hughes' deal chews up a whole bunch of RFA years. Mm-hmm. And the next contract for Filip Hronek, let's pretend that it's 8 years, will chew up 7 UFA years and 1 RFA year. So they're apples to oranges comparisons as to the two deals.
Knowing Jim Rutherford, if this becomes a difficult negotiation, do you think he's the type of manager that would look at that and go, all right, we're going to explore other options in terms of perhaps seeing if there's a market for him or seeing whether what other defensemen might be available? Or do you think they're married and tied to this player because of what they originally gave up for him and because overall he's had a pretty good first year in Vancouver?
Well, I heard you guys talking about potentially some of the negatives of Filip Hronek. But one thing that kind of stands out to me, and I know that there's more layers to this given Rick Tocchet and his influence and the structure and everything else that's been in play, but a lot of the same pieces were already in place last year for this team. Pettersson was here, Demko was here, Hughes was here. I mean, Miller was here. Like, there's only a few additional outliers, and you know, you could talk about the bottom six and the players that they brought in and a couple of the other defensemen that have been beneficial. But Hronek, to me, at least in terms of looking at their play, and I understand what you're saying about him driving his own pair, I think it's been mutually beneficial for both Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek, not just a one-sided part of this. This has been the best partner that Quinn Hughes has had by a wide margin. And Filip Hronek, if you look at his numbers, like throughout his career, he's almost always consistently been a half point per game defenseman. The fact that 35 of his 45 points this year at even strength, and he's about to surpass at even strength alone his previous career point totals, and you mentioned the lack of PP one time that he gets, like to me, like where are you going to find another right shot D that fits this well with your superstar defenseman?
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I think that's kind of what Canucks fans are trying to figure out. And that's what we were trying to figure out earlier in the show. Are there any other names you think that are going to be out there? Like, you know, we saw John Marino. That was one Harm brought up. Are there going to be any other names this offseason that you think could be on the move to kind of, you know, be in that competition with Filip Hronek?
To be honest, I haven't done a deep enough dive yet on what the market looks like this summer. I'm still digging out of trade deadline. Just got back from GM meetings. And at some point in the next couple of weeks, I'll put out my top 50 free agents and we'll go from there and I'll begin to really analyze it. But in terms of the Canucks and from Hronek's perspective, it's a really interesting spot because I think one key point to look at here is what is Filip Hronek's arbitration number if it were to get to that point, which I think would be a really tough spot for the Canucks. Really not unlike the Pettersson situation. If he goes to ARB, he's looking at a one-year deal that then walks him to free agency. And you mentioned what they gave up to get him, which I think you have to keep in mind. But as best I can tell from looking at that situation, his pure counting stats, minutes played, all those things, he's looking at like somewhere between 7.5 and 8 on a pure ARB case, a one-year deal. Why would he take less than that on an 8-year deal when you know that the cap's going up by leaps and bounds after that? And more than that, if you're looking at it solely from Hronek's perspective, as good as the fit has been in Vancouver, and by the way, I think he loves it, and I think you know, everything to this point has been extremely positive. He's 1 year away from being able to call his own shot. He can pick his team. He can pick his dollars. He's tantalizingly close to free agency at a time when he's played really well. What's the incentive to take, you know, a major discount on what would already be a pretty high ARB number? Like, that's the part that I think people and fans get twisted about, is they don't like the idea, and people have bristled at the idea of every time that I've been saying this since October, that his number starts with an 8. People are like, oh, that's way too much. Can't pay him more than Quinn Hughes. Like, well, that's what the market bears. And that's what the market is going to bear moving forward, that, you know, you might say, hey, 8 million a year, like let's just hypothetically say it's 8 times 8. You're going to say right now, probably fair for both player and team. But the longer that 8-year deal goes on, as the cap climbs north of $100 million, 8 suddenly begins to look team friendly at year 3 when he's 29 years old. So I still think that this is going to surprise people in terms of how it plays out. Everyone to this point has knocked me, laughed at me, whatever it is that you know, I'm just looking at it from a pure numbers standpoint. And, you know, I as I've done many times, just ring up another team and ask them what the ARB number is for Filip Hronek's deal. And they'll tell you every time, right around 775. So I can't imagine the deal coming in less than that.
Frank, you brought up the Elias Pettersson contract there, and I found that interesting. Obviously, you were right on top of the Pettersson contract. I did tell the story on the show, just so you know, of when I got the frantic call from you telling me that you were about to report that it was an 8-year deal. So obviously, you were right on top of that. You nailed that deal.
I love that you were, wait, when I called you, by the way, you were like, right now? Like, you want me to go to my computer right now? And I was like, look, buddy, I don't care what you do. Do go to your computer or not. I'm just giving you a heads up. I'm about to tweet this.
And for people in the market, they'll know this. I was on the phone with Bob Marjanovic, Moj, from the market here. I was on the phone with Moj talking fantasy baseball, and we were in a really good conversation. And then you said, call me right now. I said, I'm just on call. Just give me a second. You said, no, right now. And I rushed to my phone. I had to hang up on the Moj, and I feel bad about that, but he got it. He understands exactly why.
It was so really funny though. Like I call him and I'm like, hey, I need to talk to you. And you go, now? And I'm like, right now. I think I sent back like capital letters, like right now.
Yes, exactly. So yes, you were on top of that deal. The reason I brought that up is because, you know, how similar are these cases? Like, maybe similar, just comparables that you see between these negotiations, between these situations with Pettersson and now with Hronek for the Canucks?
Only similar in the sense that they were both 1 year remaining under team control. That's really the only similarity. Obviously, different positions, both premium positions, depending on, you know, who you talk to. Some say center more valuable than right shot D. Some say right shot D more valuable than center. Either way, Pettersson obviously in a bit of a different category in terms of impact, superstar, you know, all those things that go with his game. But that said, I don't see any difficulty here. And like, as I've pointed out in the beginning, there's been so much breathless conjecture. Oh, he rejected this. He, you know, the original offer was this. Like from what I can tell, like, all of that is wildly inaccurate. And I don't think they've gotten anywhere past the preliminary cordial conversation. And then wherever it goes from here, I think the focus has been on having him, you know, finish off what has been a great first full season with the team.
You were, of course, at NHL GM meetings recently. Forget what the GMs have been discussing in terms of rule changes. If Gary Bettman went to you and said, you can implement one rule change, whether it's with the game itself or standings, whatever it is, what would your rule change be?
Aside from taking the Arizona Coyotes and moving them to Salt Lake City?
I mean, you can talk about that too.
Yeah, we can get to that in a second. My one playing rule change is really simple. I coach minor hockey here in the U.S., and we've got an entire generation of players that are growing up not being allowed to ice the puck on the penalty kill. And it still blows my mind that you can not ice the puck while you're at even strength, but you can commit an infraction and be sent to the box. And then suddenly you're allowed to do something that previously you're no longer allowed to do. Doesn't compute. I've heard some fun takes on this in just chatting with some executives around the league the last couple of days. Cause I'd bounce my little stupid idea off of them. And they said, well, what happens if, we put it in a spot where you're allowed to ice it one time on a penalty kill. And then the second time you ice it, it's another minor penalty, which would put you down at 5-on-3. And then if you do it a third time on the same kill, that it becomes a penalty shot. And I was like, man, that would be some interesting strategy when it comes to killing off situations, particularly late in games. But either way, like I said, players are forced at this, you know, all age groups in the U.S., not at junior hockey or in the NCAA, but to really make creative plays with the puck when you're on the kill. And I can't believe that at the NHL level, we can't force pros to do the same thing.
I love it. What do you think of the actual proposed changes that we've heard? Like, obviously, we were talking with Carson Soucy today, and he said he got a warning in their last game about having his leg hanging over the bench. So they're already dishing out the warnings to players. But the one that we're really asking about is the challenges on high sticks. I really like the rule.
I mean, it's really minor because I actually have the data in front of me. There were only two mistakes, I think. Let me just double check the high sticking. This is actually pucks out of play. There were 234 penalties last year and only two incorrect calls. But the same rule applies to both pucks out of play and friendly fire high sticks, in that, first off, there's not very many mistakes. These officials actually do a pretty good job on those two fronts. And two, I don't know how often they're going to be challenged, because you better get it right. Because if the challenge is unsuccessful, not only does the original penalty stick, but then you're now in a 5-on-3 situation for a full 2 minutes. And that could be enough to swing a game, quite honestly. So I don't know exactly what the stats are on teams and their success rate at 5-on-3 for a full 2 minutes, but I'd have to imagine it's north of 50%.
Rick Tocchet would say there's been a lot of misses this year. I think he's a big fan of this rule, and he suggested that if a guy gets caught snapping his head and it was a phantom high stick, that guy should get a penalty. That's a very sensitive topic for Rick Tocchet. He's talked about it a lot in this market so far. Well,
guys are really, it's amazing just watching. So at the GM meetings, they actually bring us into the room and we sit at the table and they've got the screens in front of us that the managers are looking at. And they rolled some clips for us and they showed us one, like just examples that they use to highlight. There was one where Adam Fox got a high stick in the face from a teammate. And like, you would have thought that he was shot. Like it looked and felt like it barely grazed him, but it's the whole, like, you know, neck goes back, everything dramatic. And I get the idea of trying to sell it, but man, it is, some of them are just not a good look.
Did you learn anything about Arizona's future at the GM meetings? And what's your take around the whole Salt Lake City angle as well?
So to me, the most interesting thing that came from the GM meetings was what wasn't said. I think when you look at the Arizona situation, the league had a carte blanche opportunity right in front of them to say, definitively, the Coyotes are staying at Mullet Arena next season, regardless of whatever happens with this June auction date. Why did they stop short of saying that? My belief is because they're working on contingencies behind the scenes that may involve, you know, pulling up stakes and relocating this team before we even get to that June date. I think not only is there skepticism as to whether or not this Coyotes ownership group can pull it off and win the auction, but I think there's just a lack of faith in general about this Coyotes ownership group to then be the right group that leads this team forward, even if they could somehow magically get an arena built. So I think there's lots of concerns, and what might those contingencies be? This is not confirmed, but the speculation behind the scenes is that the NHL is weighing, or at least looking at, the legalities or possibilities of how could we potentially claw back this franchise if we need to. And it's going to depend, of course, on the willingness of Alex Mariuelo, the owner of the Coyotes. It's going to depend on, you know, is he willing to play ball? Is he willing to step away? The thought process is that they'd essentially make him whole for every dollar that he's put into the team. the league would get the franchise back and then pull in a huge relocation fee from Salt Lake and Ryan Smith to then move the team there for next season. Now, again, this is speculation and not confirmed, but what the NHL is weighing is this going to be a fight? Is it worth fighting? Is it worth trying? What are the optics of trying to claw back our team? And then what happens in Arizona? How can we find a way to save face? And I think that's another interesting wrinkle here is if you do take the team back, or if Maruello willingly gives you the team back in exchange for something, will the NHL go back to Arizona and say, hey, in a 5-year period of time, you get an arena, we will bring a new expansion team back to Arizona on the other end of this. And so there's a lot of moving parts to this. What we may ultimately see, as the NHL has already been committed in Arizona for 2+ decades now through thick and thin, they obviously don't want to leave. They may, the easiest route possible is to just see this through. If he wins the auction and can actually build an arena, great. If not, then that gives you a full other year to then relocate, because Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, did say that he thinks June is too late. They've run out of runway at that point to relocate. But in the meantime, over these next 60 to 75 days, they're weighing all the different possibilities to potentially step in and get this moving in another direction, quite literally.
I wonder what direction that is. And it's interesting that you brought that up, the idea of moving back to Arizona, because I really hadn't considered that. Like, I hadn't really thought about that. But that's really interesting. Another thing around the league that I saw you tweeting about, Frank, Sean Couturier and John Tortorella. We know John Tortorella really well in this market. The Sean Couturier situation in Philadelphia, what are your thoughts on that?
It feels unnecessary. And I've, you know, I feel like I've weighed in and taken John Tortorella to task a few times already on the situation. Here's the thing. I watch the Flyers closely. They're in my market. I've watched Sean Couturier closely for 12 years now. I know that he didn't play for the last two. And he has not been at his best. That part is obvious. But I also know in watching this team that there were plenty of other players that John Tortorella could have picked out to sit first. And I get that the idea is to send the message. And it was really funny watching the responses to my tweet today, because people were saying, oh, like, John Tortorella doesn't owe you or the media anything. And okay, fair. That's fine. That's not what my point is. When I talked about someone that demands accountability refuses to answer to any accountability, my point is, listen to Sean Couturier's comments. He says, after being named captain 34 days ago, that he doesn't like the way that he's been treated. His agent has said publicly that John Tortorella hasn't communicated with him. So one player and captain doesn't like the way that he's being handled and is not being told anything. And then two, now for the second game in a row, John Tortorella is scratching his captain and refuses to answer any questions about it. Zero accountability on his part, who, oh, by the way, it's entirely hypocritical of someone that refuses to answer questions and doesn't feel any need to be held to that. Then, oh, by the way, as soon as he gets fired, runs right to ESPN and jumps on the panel, and did at TSN before that. Guy who doesn't feel any reason to answer the media, begs media for a job on other end. It's insane. But nonetheless, I think he doesn't owe it to us in the media, but I think he damn sure owes it to his player and his captain to explain the situation and why he's being scratched 2 games in a row in the middle of a playoff chase, let alone for someone who's been a pretty darn good player for the bulk of this season and has a Selke trophy.
Yep. And we saw Brandon Dubinsky, former Torts player, speak out on everything as well. That was on Twitter. Frank, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next week.
See you guys.
There he is, Frank Saravalli. Yeah, really interesting stuff. In this Hronik conversation, it has got the chat fired up, Harm. There's a lot of people talking about Filip Hronik now in the chat. And man, I found what Frank said so interesting, because as much as we say, like, you know, you throw out the Quinn Hughes merchant thing, I'll put up my hand and say I came up with that. I came up with the Quinn Hughes merchant thing. But, and again, I say it a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but also you can't help, you can't ignore the fact, if you're the Canucks, that a lot of Hronik's results have come from playing with Quinn Hughes. And the thing that I wonder, Harm, is just like, what would Philip Hronik be getting on a contract if he didn't have this season with Quinn Hughes? And I know that's maybe not a, it's not a, you know, bulletproof argument by any means, because he is having this season alongside Quinn Hughes, right? So that's the reality situation. He's having this. And as Frank said, that is going to impact his numbers, whether Canucks fans like it or not.
Yeah, I also wonder if part of the reason Detroit traded him in the first place was them looking ahead multiple years and understanding that even outside of this year where he's putting up career-type numbers, he's been a player that's logged a ton of minutes that has still put up pretty good point totals. And so I wonder if the Red Wings sort of looked at that and went, we'd like the player, but are we going to like him at his next contract? And I wonder if that was part of them trying to sort of get ahead of the curve of it as well.
And there were people throwing that out there when the Canucks traded for him, saying, oh, I wonder why the Red Wings made this trade. But hey, we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see. Harm, I asked you at the start, and I'm going to answer the question myself, because I started thinking in my head of like, okay, what would be too much? Like if you're looking at Philip Hronik, where, and again, you brought up the idea of you need to know what you're going to be able to get on the trade market. That's absolutely true. But just on a pure dollars figure and just looking at the contract, what would be too much? That's the question I asked you. And I think my answer, like, we're assuming eight-year deal on all of these. My answer, like, I was thinking, okay, eight is definitely too much, I think. And like, I just think that's going to be an overpay for Philip Hronik. I do. But I'm even not sure about like 7.5 and 7. And I know like that's what the market's going to dictate for a player putting up the points that Hronik does. I have way too many questions about his defensive game. I think it's as simple as that. And I think I'm just going to say it very bluntly. Like, I don't think he's a great defender.
7 to 7.5, you could at least stomach. 8 is when I'm, especially because, as Frank mentioned, the cap is going to go up and Hronik isn't, it's not like he's 30, right? Where you're like, in 3 years, he's already going to be heavily declining and you're worried about the contract. In 3 years, he's still going to be in the prime of his career. And at that point, the cap's going to be a lot higher. So if it's, let's say, 7.5, that's at least the number you can stomach. 8+ is when it starts sounding hard stomach.
I shouldn't say that. Yeah. Like, 7 isn't too much for me to say, like, oh, that's an overpay. Like, it's not an overpay. Hell, like, you know what? With the way the market's going, $8 million might be a slight overpay. But I don't know. I have way too many questions about his defensive game. And I think that's what it ultimately comes down to for me, is just that I don't know. Like, I guess if you're playing him with Quinn Hughes all the time, you're fine. Like, you can handle it. And look, like, he's been the best partner that Quinn Hughes has had to this point in his career. And I definitely don't think that it's a coincidence that the year that Hughes has a steady partner and that he's playing with Philip Hronik, that this is also the best season of Hughes' career. I don't think that's a coincidence, but I also think Hronik is going to benefit a lot more from that pairing than Quinn Hughes is from playing with Philip Hronik.
Yeah, the one thing you do have to be mindful of with Quinn is he straight up called Hronik the best partner he's ever had. You've already kind of, I don't want to say that you did Hughes dirty, but by not re-signing Tanev, it clearly sucked from Quinn's perspective. So you have to make sure that you're either, like, you're weighing Quinn in all this, in that either you're keeping Hronik and keeping him happy that way, or if you're looking at other options and potentially moving on, you better have a legit top pair caliber partner for him to play with. There better not be a significant drop off, because, and I know this is a long ways away and I'm not trying to, it's not about inducing panic or anything, but Quinn Hughes after this season has 3 years left on his deal. And the New Jersey Devils, if they end up bouncing back and being this powerhouse, when you have your two brothers there, that's always going to be at the back of your mind. And so if you're the Vancouver Canucks, you've got to make sure that you're in a position where, number one, you're winning, which they're already checking that box with the way they're playing this season. But you want to do everything possible to make sure Quinn's happy, that your own captain is in a spot where he's comfortable. So you can't overlook that aspect either, where you say, oh, we don't like 8 million, so we're going to punt him. We're going to punt Hronek and just give Quinn scraps again. And maybe the team takes a significant step back as a result. You got to be mindful of some of those other factors too.
Yeah. And this is a conversation that we're going to have, I'm sure, many more times as we head into free agency this summer.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's a game tonight, Harm. There is a game tonight at the Vancouver Canucks are taking on the Montreal Canadiens. Harm, this was something I saw in Donnie and Dolly today. I wanted to ask you it because you go to a lot of games. And, you know, we've both been to games when the original six teams have been there. And when it's the original six teams, you always see jerseys of that other team there. Always. A lot of Boston fans. The question that they asked was, what's the least popular original six team in terms of fans from Vancouver when they go to a Canucks game that you see the opposite team's jersey? I worded that poorly, but you know what I'm saying, right?
It's yeah. Like,
which other original six team's jersey do you see the least? Because obviously, I think we can say the most, we see the Leafs. Like, I think we see the Leafs more than anyone. I don't think it's the Habs. Like, I see the Habs a lot. Like, I see a lot of Habs jerseys.
So
I don't think it's them. Maybe see Chicago? A lot of Boston. Maybe Chicago. But I wonder about Chicago. It's either Chicago or the Rangers in my mind.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that has to do with the Rangers playing the Canucks in 94. Like, I wonder how much of that has to do with it.
Yeah. Or Detroit. Grady brought up Detroit. That might be a good option. I think Detroit might be the winner.
I think it might be Detroit. Yeah, I think it might be Detroit. Anyways, it was just some interesting thing that I wanted to bring up as we talk about Vancouver versus Montreal. Quick lineup notes from us. Casey DeSmith starts in goal, as we expected. Ian Cole comes out for Noah Juulsen. Harm, when the blue line was completely healthy, we saw Ian Cole. They did the load management with Ian Cole, and that's something you and I have both said we're kind of in favor of. Cole doesn't seem like he's the biggest fan of it, but at the end of the day, they need Ian Cole fresh for the playoffs, so Noah Juulsen slots into the lineup tonight.
Yeah, Ian Cole looks like a completely different player when he's rested and healthy. He is definitively the better player than Juulsen when he's fresh, when he's rejuvenated, when he has that energy, especially in the first half of the season. But lately, he doesn't look rested. It feels like his age has been showing a lot more lately, and with that in mind, I don't think there's any drop-off with Juulsen drawing into the lineup. It feels like at least once a game, there's an unforced error with Cole and the puck. And just early in the season, he was so disruptive defensively. And you have to keep in mind that because Myers and Soucy, especially Soucy, have missed a lot of time with injuries this year, that Cole's logged a ton of heavy PK minutes. Probably has been leaned on more than the coaching staff would have probably liked. So I like this move to give him some rest and make sure that he's as healthy as possible for the playoffs, because Tockett also did note that it's not just like a healthy scratch type situation, that Cole is a little banged up right now.
Yeah, and I mean, this time of year, a lot of guys are going to be going through a lot of different stuff. Okay, the Habs are 3-3-4 in their last 10 games. They are skidding a little bit. And look, it's no surprise, the Habs, we kind of knew we're going to be having a down year this year. But what can the Canucks expect to see from those Habs tonight?
Yeah, they're a one-line team. And Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky, those are the guys to sort of watch for offensively. Make sure you shut them down. And specifically, I am pretty excited to see how Slavkovsky looks, because those point totals this year aren't like, they don't jump off the page for a number one overall pick, but he's taken a significant step forward this year. And he started slow production wise, but he's been producing at a top six caliber pace since playing that right wing spot on that top line with the Canadiens. And just watching the tape back on some of his shifts during some of these recent games, for a national article I did, he's showing impressive east-west playmaking. He's starting to use his size and reach, learning how to take advantage of it. You're seeing significant progress from where he was last year, where I watched him last year and I thought, he's lost. I was thinking this guy could benefit from some time in the American League. Now he's 19 and already looks like a top six caliber NHL player. He's going to be intriguing for me to watch compared to the last time I saw him live. But yeah, if you're able to shut down that line, I mean, look at their second line, for example, on paper, according to dailyfaceoff.com. Newhook centering it with Harvey Pinard and Joel Armia, right? That's not a line that, like, that line's going to have some speed. They're going to have some work ethic. They're going to have tenacity, but they don't have nearly enough offensive talent. And even further down the lineup, I mean, their third line with Brendan Gallagher, Jake Evans, and Josh Anderson. I don't know how much you've paid attention to the Canadiens, but Gallagher and Anderson both look so washed. They both look like they're such horrible contracts right now. And Evans, I like him as a fourth line player, but that's really what he is on a good team. So the key to Montreal is, as long as he's shut down Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky, you should be able to have a successful night.
And from a Canucks perspective, I'm looking at this and saying, okay, we saw a strong game from Ilya Mikheyev and Elias Lindholm last game. First of all, continue that. But second of all, win your matchup on the scoreboard. Like, go get a goal. Go get a goal. If you're the third line, you're Ilya Mikheyev, you're Elias Lindholm, who, as I said, they played solid games. Like, I thought they were both good on Tuesday night against Buffalo. You and I talked about that. I look at Montreal as a chance for those guys to actually put something on the board. Hell, even the fourth line. It's a night for padding your point totals is what it should be.
Yeah, and they've got a young and experienced blue line, right? The only veterans really are Mike Matheson, who's having a bit of a down year, and David Savard. Outside of that, you're leaning on guys like, I like Caden Gooley a lot, but it's a tough role for him matching up against top lines. They've got Arber Xhekaj, who since being recalled from the American League has looked a lot better, but they've got him on the second pair right now, and I'm not sure that he's that type of that caliber of a defenseman. And then third pair of Harrison Kovacevic, there isn't a lot of talent on that blue line. It's a mistake prone group. It's a perfect night for, as you mentioned, some of these guys that have been going through offensive slumps to hopefully take advantage of these younger defensemen, generate some more chances, and hopefully rack up some points.
Every time Mike Matheson gets brought up, I just think of when Elias Pettersson Elias Pettersson scored the game winner when he absolutely dangled Mike Matheson out of his pants and walked him in overtime, scored that beautiful goal to cap off a really, really strong performance for Elias Pettersson. And then post game, we asked him if he was aware that Mike Matheson was the one that he walked. And of course, Mike Matheson was the one that body slammed Pettersson when he was a member of the Florida Panthers during Pettersson's rookie year with the Canucks. And Pettersson just wryly said, yeah, no comment. no comment. And he did not want to talk about it, but he knew. He knows. Elias Pettersson never forgets. So anyways, I'm always looking forward to that when we get to see those two guys face off against one another. Corbin Tuck in the Twitter live chat said losing this game tonight would be a disaster. I don't want to say it, but yeah, it would be a disaster. Look, you've got some momentum going. You just snapped your little two-game mini skid. Everybody's liking what they saw in that game against Buffalo. Keep it going against another piss-poor team. This one, obviously, not quite the same level of fraudulent as Buffalo, because at least the Habs know what they are. Like, other than their fans at the start of the year, the Habs don't come out and say, oh, yeah, we're making the playoffs. Like, we're going to push for the playoffs. The Habs know what they are. The Habs know what they are. They're not a great team. You got to win this game tonight if you're the Vancouver Canucks. Anything else that you wanted to say about the game before we get to our four wins light the lamp? JPAT had this tweet. Great, you pulled up this tweet. I forgot about this. This tweet from JPAT about the last time Montreal was in Vancouver. The Habs led 4-0. The Canucks led 5-4 mid-third. The Habs led 6-5 with 3 minutes to go. The Canucks tied it with the goalie pull. And then, of course, as I said, Elias Pettersson won it in overtime in a 7-6 final for those Vancouver Canucks. So yes, we did see some fireworks last time Montreal visited Vancouver.
Yeah, I hope it's not as dramatic. You hope it's a more of a business-like sort of polished performance rather than going down 4-0 and having to claw back. But I really think with the way, like, you got to remember how poorly this team defended last year. For them to be in a situation like that, it wasn't shocking. Whereas, I mean, it would be crazy, hard to believe if the Canucks somehow allowed 4 first period goals against a team of Montreal's caliber, especially because Montreal has scored 2 or fewer goals in 5 of their last 6 games. So I don't think we're going to have a repeat of that type of game, but who knows? You never know.
I'm just looking at the goal scorers in that game. That game that we were just talking about, that was December. What was the date? I had it. It was December 5th, 2022. It was Ilya Mikheyev scoring 2 goals, his 7th and 8th of the season. Jack Studnicka scored. Bo Horvat scored with Nils Höglander and Riley Stillman picking up the assist. And Andre Kuzmenko picked up his 12th goal of the year in that game. And then Pettersson's, well, his 12th goal of the year came in overtime. So yes, hopefully a more business-like approach and not a run-and-gun Bruce Boudreau-style game tonight when the Habs visit the Canucks. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to our Four Winds Light the Lamp contest brought to you by, you guessed it, Four Winds Brewing. Vancouver is playing Montreal tonight, and we want to know who's going to score the first goal for Vancouver. If you nail it, you could win a $25 gift card to the Four Winds Tap Room located at 72nd and River Road in Delta. Enter by following us on social media, keep an eye out for today's show clip, and comment who you think will light the lamp and score the first goal tonight. Winners will be contacted directly. Check us out at Canucks Army on Twitter, at CanucksArmy.com on Instagram, and Canucks Army on Facebook. And make sure you ask about Four Winds Light Lager at your local liquor store or have some delivered to your front door through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Okay, Harm, I'm going to say Ilya Mikheyev. I'm going with it. Scored twice last time the Habs were in Vancouver. He's scoring at least once tonight. I'm going to say he scores the first goal of the game.
I'm going to Elias Lindholm. I think this is the time for him to hopefully get some puck luck, because he did generate some chances last game. And yeah, I think he'll get one tonight, hopefully.
All right, let's get to anyone else brought to you by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and 0 delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change, terms do apply. Okay, there was one earlier in the chat that I really wanted to get to. And Harm, I was telling Grady, because Grady and I were talking, we were just texting before the show. Have you seen anything about Shohei Ohtani in the past 24 hours, Harmon?
I did, yeah, yeah.
We don't need to talk about it, but I was telling Grady that it's going to take everything in me not to talk about this bizarro situation, and I guess I'm talking about it, but we're not going to do it more, but the bizarre situation going on with Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter, Ipe. It's absolutely insane, and folks, I'm not going to talk about it on this show, but it's wild to go read about. Honestly, like, no words. You have no words, and I'm obviously dying to talk about it, but I said I wouldn't. I told Grady, I'm like, it's gonna kill me, but I'm not going to talk about the Shohei Ohtani situation on today's show.
Okay, I'm actually kind of intrigued by this because there have been a lot of conspiracy theories going around. I'll give you a 1 minute timer. Like, that's okay. It. Clock starts now. Okay, yeah, I've got it now.
Basically, what seems like happened is we saw a report come out late yesterday afternoon, on Wednesday afternoon, that the Dodgers have fired Ipe, who is Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, for those that don't know. They're like best friends. They're glued at the hip. During the COVID season when there was no baseball, Ohtani was paying Ipe's salary because the Angels weren't paying his salary at that time. So Ohtani takes care of this guy. Like, they're good friends. They're tied at the hip. Good friends, okay? And obviously he followed him when he went to the LA Dodgers this past offseason. And if you're a listener to this show, you know that Shohei Ohtani's a Dodger because we talked about it quite a bit. Basically what happened is this report came out that Ipe was stealing money from Ohtani to pay off a bookie, and there's a $4.5 million gambling debt in Ipe's name, but it was through Shohei Ohtani's bank account. So there's conspiracy theories that, one, Shohei Ohtani's this degenerate gambler, but then there's this other theory, and
allegedly,
okay, this is what I think. This is just what I think. I'm not reporting, obviously, but it sure seems like Ipe had some gambling debt and Ohtani wanted to pay it off, did not realize that it was to an illegal bookie, which is a federal crime in the United States, obviously, and that his name was going to show up there, and I think Ohtani's lawyers may have got wind of it, and then they were like, okay, Ipe, you need to say that you stole this money. Like, it can't be that Shohei willingly transferred this money, even if he was just trying to be a nice guy and pay off his friend's debt. That's kind of what I'm thinking of the whole situation. But yeah, again, these are all conspiracies, because right now the official word is that he's been fired because he stole money from Ohtani to pay off his gambling debt. But then you saw video of them like smiling with each other in the Dodgers. Stop. Okay.
Yeah, you got almost 2 minutes there.
Okay. Sorry. Someone said harm is harming us allowing this to happen.
Well, yeah, I mean, I let you go for like, I was so intrigued that I had to let you go for 90 seconds.
Yeah, I did that for a little too long, but there were some good hockey stuffs in here that I wanted to go in. We had a few up in the chat that I wanted to find. People were saying a lot about Hronek, and I really found it interesting, Harm, because we had a good conversation, obviously, at the start of this episode with Frank Saravalli, but this is one for you, and I'll let you go. I don't know if you can go find the answer. I don't know how this works at The Athletic, but Harm, this is from Karen Versation. Harm, what does Dom's model have as the average projected value for Hronek over the next 8 years? Like, are you able to go figure that out while I answer the next question?
He would not have that available yet, but I can tell you, I can dig up his market value for this season based
off
his performance.
Okay, go do that. Go do that, and I'm going to find the next question because I had one. Yeah, so this is an interesting one. I'll answer it alone while you find that. This is from Lefty All Around. He spoke about it as well. I think there's a couple people. I don't know who brought it up first. It was also Karen Versation. If you had a bracket of 1 through 32 teams bracket, everybody makes the playoffs. The Boston Bruins match up with the San Jose Sharks in the first round. It's pure anarchy. I don't like it. I don't like the idea. And I think it was done in jest a little bit, but man, it would be fun to watch like the Sharks play the Bruins in a 7-game series. I just think that would be hilarious because you'd get the upsets at some point, and it would be really funny watching like the Habs knock off like Winnipeg or something. So it'd be funny, but I don't think you want to expand the playoffs much more than we already suggested last week when we talked about it. Okay, Harm, do you have something for us?
It's lagging, so I need you to stall for me a little bit longer. Let's see. Okay, I pulled it up.
Okay.
Dom's model has Filip Hronek's value for this season at $7.7 million.
Hmm. And yeah, it's under $8 million. Like, it's under $8 million, and I think that's what's fair.
And for reference, in evaluating Hronek's in the 97th percentile of defensemen when it comes to his offensive rating. So that's a collection of his individual metrics, such as, you know, goals, assist points, expected goals, but also on ice metrics in terms of play driving. And then his defensive rating is -3. Which has him in the 32nd percentile, so well below league average as in terms of defensive impact, which sounds about right. And honestly, 7.7 in terms of his value this year, that checks in terms of like making somewhat sense based off what we've seen from him this year.
Someone asked about a Hronek for Luke Hughes, one for one trade. Devils say no to that trade.
Yeah, no.
I can't believe Frank somehow managed to bring up Quinn Hughes going to the Devils. He pissed off a lot of fans with that hit with us today.
Did he really?
What?
Did I miss that? Like, did I just zone out? And
maybe he did bring it up. Like, oh no, you brought it up. Excuse me.
I was gonna say like
someone pinned it on Frank in the chat. That's why I got a little confused there.
No.
Okay. I found this interesting and I wanted to, Grady's got one. Okay, Grady, pull this up because I had something from Dave Hall that I wanted to plug. But yeah, Grady, you bring it up and then I'll close it out. Okay, this is from Terrence McDonald in the Facebook live chat. What would you guys think of the first line, Lotto line, second line, Garland, Lindholm, Hoglander, third line, Mikheyev, Suter, Pods, fourth line, Lafferty, Bluger, Joshua. Man, Joshua is a fourth line. Okay, I like this lineup. If you put Joshua up where Podkolzin is, and Podkolzin is on the fourth line, I like this lineup.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to like my lineup without Joshua from yesterday. I do wonder if, like, with Mikheyev, Suter, and Joshua, do you have a playmaker on that line? That's the only thing that that concerns me. I mean, I like it in terms of like if you're, you know, towards the tail end of the regular season, you want to give it a shot. You want to see if you can recapture some of the Lotto line magic. You know what? I like it as sort of like a plan B, C, or D option in terms of your potential lineup combinations when Joshua returns. I still don't, for the playoffs, like it as a plan A necessarily, because I think you're stacking too many of your best offensive chips on one line. And again, if you run into an LA or a Vegas and they have a checking line led by a Deneau or William Karlsson, I worry if one of those defensive centers can just blanket that Lotto line, especially on the road where they'd be able to dictate matchups. I worry that you might not have enough offense throughout the rest of the lineup if you're the Canucks to overcome that.
Okay, I wanted to plug this, Harm. This is what I wanted to plug. Was Dave Hall just wrote this for Canucks Army. 7 NCAA free agent defense targets for the Canucks to target. Folks, you can go find it right now on CanucksArmy.com. I always love reading about these because you and I were throwing it out there. And look, Christian Felton, we were hype on Christian Felton. We were one of the only shows to lead with the Christian Felton signing. We did it, Harm. We did it. We're tapped in on our NCAA free agents. But man, there's some interesting names. And like, if I was scouting, and this is just a quad take, vibes take, go for like the really tall right shot defenseman. That's what I would just do. I would just load up on those guys and then see if I could develop one of them. Because you increase your probabilities. Like we talk about how probabilities work. You increase your odds and your probabilities if you get like four of them. So just go sign four. And it's one of those things where it's like, all right, three of you aren't going to make it, but one of you might. And then they know that they're like competing.
Isn't that just what old school GMs have been doing drafting wise for the last 20 years? Like, I feel like because they're so large, everybody salivates over, oh, what this guy could be, that they draft them too much based off their potential and the idea of what they could be in a perfect scenario rather than looking at how good are they right now.
But now you've got all these new age GMs, these young whippersnappers that don't draft like that. So all these great, great guys are just out there not getting drafted. That's why you pick them up as NCAA free agents.
Can you name one example?
No, but it's foolproof. Trust me.
Exactly. There you go.
All right. We'll close it out there. We'll be back tomorrow to break down tonight's game against the Montreal Canadiens. Folks, make sure I got to plug it. Make sure that you go watch Rinkwide Vancouver or listen to Rinkwide Vancouver. A little foreshadowing, maybe. I don't know. Listen to Rinkwide Vancouver wherever you get your podcasts after the game. Jeff Patterson, you're not on. Are you on with Jeff tonight, Harm?
Nope.
Okay. Me neither. I don't think so. That's nice. Anyways. We'll close it out there for my co-host, Harmon Dial, our technical producer, Grady Sass. My name is Dave Bujelli. Thank you so much for this episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.